Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with Grandmaster Adam. How are you, sir?
Oh no, you did it for the second time. You finally duplicated a nickname. I'm disappointed in you.
Did I already do Grandmaster?
Grandmaster has definitely
Oh,
been done.
man. All right,
I'm so bummed right now.
Fresh Prince Adam. I wasn't prepared today.
Yeah, okay, Fresh Prince, at least, you know, you came up with that rather quickly. I'm just grateful to be here with the Sith Lord of the DMO world, Stuart Butler.
Thanks. I'll take it, man. The Sith are misunderstood. It's all about perspective.
There, you want to have an ethics conversation? Let's talk about how the Sith is misunderstood.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, from their perspective, they're not evil, right? They're kind of like Thanos in the Marvel universe. They're doing the universe a favor.
So all you have to do is believe you're not evil, and then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think anyone really believes they're evil, right? I think everyone has a perspective. But, you know, this is a good conversation. It's a good segue into what we're going to be talking about today. We already had some conversations about the ethics of AI, but I've got two giants and titans of the industry on here. And might I say, Adam, you were not at DI Marcom, were you not, right?
There was a
session that was rated above all other sessions as the number one most enjoyed and valuable session by all of the attendees of DI Marcom. And you've got the three people that were on that panel discussion. So welcome to the show, Jeanette Rausch.
Thanks.
First and foremost.
Glad to be here.
And then Vimal Vyas. How are you, buddy?
Great. Glad to be here. This is very exciting.
So Vimal, you got to host the panel. And you did a great job moderating that and keeping Jeanette and me under control, which is hard to do. We both get very excited when we're talking about AI. But how was that experience for you?
It was great. Even just talking to the audience, you know, surveying the audience as well, getting an understanding of where they're at in their you know, role in rolling out AI policies. It was great. And just you two were just great because you were answering the questions based on your experiences. And I think that's what the audience wants to hear. They want to know, you know, the practical aspects that are out there, the deployments of how things are working. And I think you all did a great job of doing that. I mean, I pitched in here and there, so that was good.
You did a good job herding cats for sure. And one of those cats was the crazy cat, Jeanette Rausch, who
has a cat in the background right now.
I do. It's time for the wet food to be taken out of the can and put on a plate so his fat little head can fit in it.
Nice.
So he'll whine for the next 50 minutes.
Now, Jeanette, it would be remiss of me not to thank you for all you've done for the industry, your leadership, your thought leadership and your leadership, and just the amount you've posted and contributed to the zeitgeist around AI for DMOs. I literally think has accelerated the entire industry. So you deserve a big tip of the hat for all the work you've done and continue to do now at Brand USA. So thank you.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I add to that? Real quick,
yeah.
I mean, let's make Jeanette feel really good. No, Jeanette, what's fascinating to me is there's a lot of people, and of course we'll get into the AI conversation, but there's a lot of people that have, and in the DMO space especially, this kind of wait and see mentality. Well, I'm going to see if this takes before I commit or before I jump all in. And not only have you helped propel the industry forward, you've helped propel yourself forward, because with the persona you were able to build by continuing to progress with AI and demonstrate the evolution of AI, you were able to leverage that into getting a new job, a new opportunity that kind of scales your career trajectory. So I don't know, I hope that's okay for me to say, but what an incredible demonstration of the value of embracing technology instead of staying on the sidelines.
I really appreciate that. And that's actually, like, I was very, you know, targeted and specific about that approach to it. My husband is a headhunter and a career coach. So it was actually a really thoughtful kind of strategy to what is this going to mean? You know, I just feel like I was on the sidelines before. Like, I could have had a bigger role in website development, when I at the beginning of my career. And I certainly was at the point in my career when social media blew up. I could have done something more with that. And I didn't. I focused on marketing, or I was focusing on tourism sales for Broadway tickets, and didn't really dive in the way I could have. And so it's, and the thing is, it's so early. So there is
So what was it,
lots of
Jeanette? What
room.
was it about AI that really that created that catalyst? What was the catalyst for you to jump all in on AI like you did so early?
I just felt like it was a miracle. I just, the very first time that I saw it and saw what it did, even the day that it was released, November 30th, where it's like, oh my God, it can write an ad from the perspective of a pigeon. It's not like I'm looking to run ads from the perspective of a pigeon. It was just, oh, this is finally here. This imaginary sci-fi thing that has the ability to just like unlock secrets for me. I used to run the insights department of a Broadway ad agency. And so I was forever trying to connect what media were we running and what week of the year it was and what would the tourism look like that week to the actual sales for a Broadway show. And I hired these people who could figure out how to use Python to take the wrap reports and do all of this cool stuff that I just couldn't learn fast enough. And when this came out, I was so jealous that it didn't exist 10 years earlier. I'm making up for lost time.
Like of a
That
bug.
is
Love
awesome.
it.
Yeah, that's great. So you guys have seen the show, heard the show, you know the shtick. We have a segment at the beginning, and it's a very on-topic segment for Ask Stu's News today. But Adam, are you ready with the jingle?
Even the volume's right this time. I am
You
on
got it.
point.
Just don't double play it. We'll be good. Vimal,
I'm
I'd love to
enjoying
get
the visual.
your original or your real-time take on this jingle. Do you like it? Do you hate it? Does it need improvement?
I think it needs to use the new Chat GPT model to revise the tone and the voice to make it sound more energetic.
Yeah. Oh, good feedback, man. So, Adam, work on that
Well,
for us.
so I've got a plan, actually, and I want to share that with you guys since this is an AI discussion today. I actually am going to try to clone Stewart's voice and accent and make him a country star. I feel like it has to be country because for some reason, a British guy singing country sounds funny to me, and I've got to hear it. So we're going to make it happen with AI.
I would
I'm
love
looking
to
forward to
see
that.
that.
That's
Love
gonna be
to see that.
amazing. Do a little video with it too. It'll be great. So
Okay.
Stu's News today is actually about the new models that OpenAI have released and are now available for paid subscribers to ChatGPT. So it's O3 and O4 Mini. Now they had the worst naming conventions in the history of any product ever because we were on 4.0, but now we're on 0.3, which is better because it has deeper reasoning than 4.0. But I've been playing with this a little bit since it came out a couple of weeks ago, and I've got to tell you, it's a game changer for me. Like the amount of depth you can sit and watch it think and rationalize and reason. And instead of going and just doing something for 10 seconds and coming back with its initial snapshot answer, it sort of debates with itself and rationalizes, and it will take, a minute, 4 minutes, 5 minutes sometimes to come back with a response. But the quality of the response is so good. Just this morning I was using it. We just did our annual sentiment analysis, resident sentiment survey. And usually that takes hours and hours to sort of extract some of the big talking points. You got to look through manually and look through charts and stuff. And so I just uploaded past years in the new survey data to 03. And my goodness, like I had to go back and verify that it was factual because it does have a little tendency to hallucinate a little higher rate than some of the previous models. But my goodness, it probably just this morning took me 30 minutes to do something that a year ago, and even with regular ChatGPT, would have probably taken me 4 or 5 hours, So this is game changing for me. I'd love to hear from you guys if you've been using this and what you think about it. And Vimal, let's start with you.
Yeah, I think well, the fascinating thing is how it's bringing all the modules together and using and thinking all at one time. Obviously, it's through the step process of how people think, and then producing it. So it's really fascinating what it's doing. I just love the blinking thinking sign, because then I'm like, yep, thank you for thinking for the first time. Some of the ways that I've been testing it is actually with economic impact analysis, as we deal with a lot of that in-house. I've been using, obviously, not with personal information, but just the zip code, number of tickets, being able to pull that in there, and it's able to quickly reason through if zip codes are correct or not. It uses Python to check things and outputs statistics and graphs. So it's really helping us understand the breakdown of, local, overnight, and day trip. So that's been very helpful, and it automates it, and it's a lot quicker than it was before. And another fascinating thing to me, and what I feel that is going to be important, is the visualization aspect of how it can scan maybe a sign or some sort, and that's going to really help with accessibility. One of the things that I've been looking at is how can I evolve the chat bot or the generative AI chat bot on the site to be more visual aspect with a phone, and bringing that together and connecting the visual and speech aspect. I think that's the biggest game changer to me from enhancing our chat bots or reasoning with the data and content that we have, and removing a lot of that prompting is what the fascinating part to me is. Just going back to that previous example of economic impact analysis, I don't have to prompt questions as much as before, which I think is pretty much the best part.
Yeah, it really does feel like an assistant, right? At this point, a next level assistant. Jeanette, have you been using it? I'm assuming you have. And what are your takeaways?
I am using it constantly. I can't believe how good O3 is. I have the $200 like pro account subscription, because I can't bear the thought of having that particular tool being taken away from me. And
I
there's
need your
somebody,
budget. That's what
right?
I
Sadly, not like rolled out to everybody. I am using it so much, and there's rate limits on those team accounts for how many times a month you can use it. One really great use case is, a couple of weeks ago, I went to a conference in San Francisco called, it was a SHRM conference called the AI plus HI, I think a human intelligence conference. And so it's an HR conference. And one of the things they did in that conference, of course, I took a bunch of notes, but they had live like transcription during the event. So for the second day of the event, I had the transcripts of what people said during the main keynote sessions. So I was able to take all of my notes and takeaways and those transcripts, feed it into O3, and say, I want to create an HR like center of AI excellence at Brand USA. Like, what are the tools that I could be creating for our three-person HR team that will help the company, answer. We already have things like our employee handbook in a custom GPT, but helping me understand what are some steps in the HR process that maybe we could build a small agent to help with. Just moving from individual use cases to departmental use cases. And O3 was able to ingest all of this information and then really put together a thoughtful step-by-step plan for what to do, that I could then go back and say, no, we're not going to make a resume parser. We're not uploading resumes and PII, but let's explore this idea a little further of taking our standard operating procedure and finding two or three steps in there that maybe we could automate. So just like laying that out for me was so brilliant. For another project, I do weekly training for the staff. And somebody had asked if I would do a session on AI Mythbusters. So I went to O3. I'm like, list some common myths about working with AI. And I tell you what, have any of you used any of the AI enhanced presentation tools like Gamma or Beautiful.ai?
I haven't.
So Beautiful.ai, I've started using that for my keynote presentations, because it's a competitor to PowerPoint and Google Slides. It looks a little slicker, which, if I'm the AI person, I feel like my presentations are supposed to look a little slicker. And it has this AI feature I'd never quite figured out the point of before. So I tell you what, I open this AI feature up, and I'm like, build the presentation on this. And I just pasted in all of the myths that O3 had given to me. And it wrote the entire presentation, including all of the examples, all of the sub-bullets, found all of the icons to make it look nice. I pressed the second button to apply our presentation template to it. I mean, and I tell you what, the presentation is done. Like, I've gone back through
Well.
to delete text because it was a little wordy, but
Right.
I cannot believe that this stuff is available to us in 2025.
It's amazing. Yeah, we just had a board retreat a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things I was asked to do is because we don't really have an AI or an innovation person and stuff, so the resident nerd me ends up being, carrying that mantle. And so they asked me to really just talk about where we're heading and the changes coming with AI and consumer behavior and stuff we've talked about on the show. But I did a presentation with Manus, and it was one of the first things I tested with Manus to say, go do all the research, go put it together in a PowerPoint presentation. And I literally didn't change a single word, edit it at all. And so I gave this presentation to the board, and I was like, at the end of it, I'm like, how many of you right now believe me that this is going to be a game changer? And there were a few hands went up. And so I'm like, all right, for those who didn't raise your hand, just know this presentation took me 5 minutes. It took me 30 seconds to write a prompt, 30 seconds to print it out, and 4 minutes to staple it together because I'd handed it out to them. And then I'm like, now how many of you are really taking this serious? And all the hands went up. So I think the tools that we're having today, well, are now emerging today, mean and force us to fundamentally rethink what our role is and how we can accomplish our objectives. I mean, obviously we can be more efficient and more effective at the way we currently do things, but I think we've got to step back even further and start from first principles and say, what are we trying to accomplish? And now with all these new resources, what's the best way to accomplish that? I think just fitting AI into our current workflow is going to get us a certain distance, but I think we can get a lot further, a lot quicker if we sort of start from ground up. Just my opinion. Adam, do you want to weigh in on O3 real quick before we
Yeah,
jump into the
so
meat of the content?
yeah, I had never used it. And so when you sent over Stu's news this morning, I was checking it out for the first time. I hadn't had a chance to actually get in and play with it. And since we started the conversation, I've accomplished something in my mind unbelievable. And that's the fact that I first asked it, what are the reasons people book a trip to one destination versus another? And then I asked it for the specific, and you got the expected answers. That wasn't very impressive. And then I said, well, what are the neural triggers that cause people to make these decisions? And it listed those out. Right. And so it had anticipatory reward and dopamine release was one. And another one was early attention and salience detection. And I said, okay, now I want you to find Myrtle Beach's current campaign and analyze it based on those neural triggers. So now I have a list of each of the neural triggers that fire in the brain when you're trying to make a decision like that. And how the Myrtle Beach campaign, an analysis of how it matches up with each one. And it's something that I can send and you can share in the show notes afterwards. But it's like, I did this while Jeanette was talking. Like, this is crazy the level of analysis that you can get with this that you couldn't get. I couldn't have gotten that with just the ChatGPT 4.0.
Yeah, that's impressive. It's just all the pieces that they have built coming together so efficiently. It's just amazing what it can do. And I mean, it even tells me how long it took, 48 seconds or whatever it was, to provide me all the data I needed for analysis. So it's really cool.
Yeah, and Vimal, you sort of touched on something. We buried the lead a little bit. So one of the not just the reasoning side of this model, but also its ability to sort of multifunction. It can go search the web. It can write Python code and do analysis and stuff like that. So it's sort of a nudge towards agentic AI for open AI that is now open to the masses. And really, I'm very, very excited about this. So let's talk about the subject we wanted to talk about today, which was we did a panel on the ethics of AI. We've talked about that on the show before. Will
An
Sethman came on
award-winning
and C.A.
panel,
Clarke. That's right. That's
a
right.
highly popular panel.
That's right. The best, some would say, the majority of people said the best
Number one.
panel at DI Marcom. Maybe we need to redo it. But we've got two guests here that are coming at this from different perspectives. You're both very, very knowledgeable. And I would say, Jeanette, you've probably been on the tip of the spear in terms of deployment and experimentation. And Vimal, you sort of take a more cautious approach, right? You know what? You wanted to be slow and steady in terms of the rollout to your staff and things like that. So obviously there's some ethics involved in those decision-making. So I would like to start there. I mean, I'll start with Jeanette and say, Jeanette, what obviously there's risks. You've already touched on some of them, things like PII and security and things like that. But what was it that led you to take sort of, someone may call a cavalier approach to AI in terms of being an early adopter, testing and experimenting and rolling things out publicly before maybe everyone had had a chance to even breathe and catch up. But what was it that led you down that path of radical experimentation?
Well, this was back at New York City where I was serving in a marketing role. You know, the beginning of 2023, nobody really knew what this impact was going to be of ChatGPT and, you know, what would it mean for work. I actually, when it first came out, I spent a lot of time online looking for examples of how people were using it and not really seeing anything. And I couldn't believe nobody was talking about this online. Like, there, you could find a little bit of stuff hidden on Reddit, but it just hadn't permeated anywhere yet. And so I started January 2023 saying, I'm going to just test this out every single day to see what is it good at and what is it not good at. And then I'm going to write about it on LinkedIn. And so I did have, like, I had spent December reading so much about how is this created, how does this work, that I did have like a general understanding of what is, you know, quote, okay to put in a model and what is not. So, you know, and how much PII did I have access to? I wasn't throwing resumes in there. I wasn't doing anything nuts that would give away all of New York City's secrets. And also, you know, and then I started kind of finding my tribe a little bit. Like Kara Franker started talking about what she was doing at Estes Park at the time with AI. Mm-hmm. And so, and she's a lawyer, she's an attorney. So I was also able to get a little bit of that governance piece early on. And I like talking to her and kind of other people working, you know, at a higher level, I think, than I was at that moment. I said, well, A, the risk of not doing this is also a risk. And B, a lot of what DMOs work with is public information that's publicly available.
Right.
Or we're working with ideas. If I'm putting together a campaign, a marketing campaign, that's not trade secrets, a lot of it. It's just taking public resources and analyzing them in a way that helps me come up with a more informed decision. So yeah. I figured out a working process that didn't make me nervous. And then when I started speaking at conferences about this, I will tell you, it's the number one thing people ask about. People are so nervous about putting the wrong thing into an LLM. And what am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? There's not a lot of clear legal guidance around this, except perhaps the EU AI Act. And so mm-hmm. The people were looking for direction. And so I took the time to, I took an online course that was a study course for IAPP's, what is it called? They have a AI governance certification program through the mm-hmm. IAPP. And so going through the study materials for that helped me frame better what is it, what's the distinction between security and privacy? Stuff that yeah. as a non-attorney, you know, I didn't fully appreciate.
Yeah.
But it's just,
so you were very conscious of it, but you sort of, you took a calculated risk and sort of looked at what the potential fallout could be and decided to move forward. Now, Vimal, let's talk through your approach a little bit, because you're sort of on the other side of the spectrum a little bit in terms of you're really trying to protect your organization and your team and really be thoughtful about rolling out a process and a policy for your team, right? So you talk us through that?
Yeah, so yeah, I did the external component first. So, you know, my AI journey started when DI put out the Destination Next Future Study, and it stated that AI was a number one trending aspect at that point during my process of budgeting and writing my business plan. That was actually at the right time that I need to look at AI. What do I need to do about it? And ironically enough, that gave me the opportunity to work with a chatbot, a generative AI chatbot with Satisfied Labs, trying to incorporate that into our website. So my approach was very conservative in that I started it off with Satisfied Labs, created a beta internally with all staff. We met with every staff member to make sure they understood what we're getting ourselves into. Make sure they understood, hey, it's a chatbot. Make sure that the expectations and the assumptions are set that may not answer correctly. Then once I get all that feedback, I, made the prompting answering all correct and made it better. When you're talking about generative response versus pre-written, a lot of our stuff was pre-written to make sure it was on brand. That was the most important aspect. Then the next level was the board. I did a number of presentations to the board to make sure that they're engaged. I made them as beta testers. That gave me the opportunity to get feedback from them. The biggest thing was getting the buy-in and leadership buy-in. All that came together in the board meetings. So that allowed me to launch the product externally. So for my approach, it's conservative to make sure that everybody is on board. Everybody is making sure that they're providing the feedback. And the cool thing about the board aspect is that, they were giving feedback. They were using it. They were using it for date nights and answering their questions. And some of the, I got some great feedback on what was missing, what needed to be added, and that all worked well. Now, the flip side of that is that we trained staff early on enough to understand the concerns around hallucinations, how things were responding to the chatbot, again, setting that expectation. That gave us the opportunity to have that, hey, it's just a chatbot. But when it did launch, the biggest concern that we had was brand integrity. How is it going to affect the brand? So we killed the chatbot as much as we could with like very obscure questions, very blunt questions, political questions, to make sure we had the prompts in play, the generic prompt, to make sure that we're not affecting our brand or responding to something that could cause and affect the brand or steering people in the wrong direction. That was one of the biggest challenges for us internally. Again, we got a lot of feedback from staff. But that was the external component I started with. Now, internally, in using AI policies, governance, I had to restructure my department, right? Had to restructure job descriptions, had to restructure all those elements, change the title of the department to include AI, change my title to be. So now the organization is set to move forward. Now, the other aspect of this is with all that set with a business plan, I presented a 3-year strategy that to the board that included AI at every level. So from an IT standpoint, security, data, and technology. At each of those levels within my strategy that I presented to the board, it had an AI component. So if we're going to be deploying laptops, it has to have AI capabilities. If we're going to have iPhones, it has to have AI capabilities. Has to be part of an AI framework and aligned with the principles that I have in the AI policy. So I'm taking a very conservative approach, but that's going to give me the framework to make decisions on for the rest of the staff, the technology, what we're deploying, how we're using it. And then data governance is really a huge concern from an adoption standpoint because it affects everybody on staff. Internal, external data, how it's classified, how it's going to move, PPI, all that, GDPR, all these new AI governance is coming out and compliance. So there's a lot of things that we have to think about beforehand. Also, what tools we're using is another challenge, right?
Yeah.
ChatGPT or Claude. So, I mean, I did take a conservative approach, but I think we're getting there slowly, but I think by July, we will be moving ahead with everything.
So I love the concept of engaging your board to be your beta testers on a new technology like this. One, it helps educate them, but two, they're going to now defend it when the inevitable criticism comes. I think that's an underutilized tactic within DMOs, is to leverage the board as the guinea pigs. But so what you didn't really talk about there was the, you know, because you've taken the complete opposite approach to most DMOs. Most DMOs started at the sort of employee level, like the internal, and work their way to the external, but you started the opposite. So did you get any feedback from your team? Was there resistance or desire to use more AI and you were sort of holding them back? Or was there any kind of friction that came from that?
Yeah, I mean, there's always that AI shadow effect, the background being used. But in talking with my CEO, we wanted to make sure AI is not being used from a content standpoint and from a marketing standpoint. And we want it to be authentic. We don't want AI part of our content at this point in time. Now, with the evolution of AI and over the next several months when I do train staff and deploy it full-blown, it will be used. But then there's going to be human in the loop, right? The approval process, how the contents will be curated. You know, if AI will be used, it needs to be knowledge. All those processes and templates will be ready for acknowledgement and approval. I mean, it's to me... I took that approach because I didn't feel that we're ready to do that yet. I really, truly want our content to be authentic. We've had opportunities to have third parties come in and provide us AI-generated content to help us. But I think our marketing team does such an outstanding job creating authentic content. And it shows in the rankings. It shows how, you know, when people are looking at our content, the highly ranked aspect of it, and how long they stay on the page. So it, to me, that is the value that I think is important. And now when you do incorporate it in, it's going to be interesting how that impacts our search engine optimization and all that at the same time.
Yeah, that's cool. Adam, you've heard these two sort of different approaches. Where do you sit on that?
I want to argue with both of them. Is that okay? Can I argue with both of them?
This is Destination Discourse. You can do whatever you want.
So I want to start with Jeanette's approach. And by the way, the reason is I want the audience to consider the potential objections to both sides, right? And one of the things that happened this week, actually, I'm not sure if you guys saw it. Are you familiar with Crumble, the cookie company?
Mm-hmm.
So Crumble just got hit with a $26 million lawsuit from using music on TikTok in their TikTok posts and organic social posts. And I think that's interesting because all of us assumed, and I've seen millions of, maybe I haven't seen millions, I don't know, I don't spend that much time on it, but I've seen thousands of posts using trademarked music, and we all thought it was fine on TikTok, all of us. And now this is really kind of a shakeup to the marketing world that a brand is getting hit with a $26 million lawsuit for using trademarked or copyrighted music in their organic and paid posts. And I use that as a little bit of a potential threat for going in on AI too early and not building guardrails like Vimal has, because you don't want the organization to be threatened by that type of a possible negative outcome. And so I do like, Jeanette, that you were using Kara as a sounding board as you decided how to move forward. I think that's really critical. And I do believe, even though there's potential threats, now I'm going to go to Vimal and say why I'm a little nervous about his approach. And Stuart's heard me talk about this, that I believe that AI was the great equalizer. That no matter whether you had been in your career for 40 years or you were just coming out of high school, everybody started at zero with what their capabilities were if they leveraged AI, right? And so my fear, Vimal, with your marketing department not being able to leverage AI in their marketing tactics is you're now going to have a team that's 3-4 years behind the capabilities of other people who have been leveraging it for years. And so, and don't get me wrong, I understand why you did it the way you did it, and I can see the intentional path that you took, but I actually worry that what the unintended consequence of that is that your marketing team is actually not going to stack up against your competitors, and that we're going to see them have to turn over in their roles so that you guys can catch up to other destinations. I don't know if that's the case, and I definitely don't want to overstate it, but those to me are the potential threats on both sides that destinations need to consider as they're evaluating what their strategy is going to be moving forward.
Yeah, I don't
Yeah.
know that I would suggest to other destin, you know, what I did kind of secretly in January 2023. Not, you know, and I didn't do it secretly. I always bragged about what I was doing because I wanted every single person doing it with me. But I, it's much, you know, we don't want BYO AI anymore. There was only BYO AI. You couldn't even pay for it if you wanted to.
Yes.
In 23, in the beginning, in that Q1. But now, like that's our role as leaders, is setting up this framework, providing the paid tools that offer both, you know, some privacy and security. Like
Yeah.
that is our job as leaders, is to help
But
people
you
see.
also, on your point, you got to set the foundation. I mean, from a budgeting standpoint, to your point of, was it the right approach? To me, when somebody's requesting to use Adobe Images last year internally, when there is controversy over Adobe's, copyright issues, to me, that's an issue. I mean, you're going to put us in a bad position. My first and foremost priority is to protect the organization from a security standpoint. So I am very conservative on what is deployed. Now, I will be deploying, I mean, technically, I've already deployed AI from an external standpoint, affecting a brand, and the entire organization is educated on what it is. Now, for them to use the tools, that's coming in July, but that's based on the foundational conservative approach of budgeting, structural and, organizational structure. Titles, job descriptions, all that has to come into play. And that sadly takes time and approval, board approval, making sure the board understands what the AI approach is for the next 3 years. So to me, that took a lot of time for me to do. I actually worked with Infotech to help me with the 3-year strategy, aligning with an AI framework, an IT framework, aligning security framework. All of that together took time. So now with all that coming together, I now have the true foundation to make sure that the organization is aligned to thrive for the next realm of AI. Now, the sad thing is it just keeps changing. So I just it,
Well,
the educational piece starting in July for me, from the start of the budget year, I have the budget for the tools that we want to deploy. So that has really held me back.
I think that's one of my main concerns with the approach that you're describing. And again, I don't want this to sound overly like pushbacky or anything, but my fear is that in the time that you took to build a 3-year AI enablement plan, the entire technology stack and industry availability changed, and now you have to rewrite the whole plan in order to be on track, unless I'm misunderstanding the process.
No, I mean, I've started this a while back and it's been approved, but it all starts in July. Like July 1 is the budget year where all these start from a tools training staff. I mean, staff are already aware of how it's being used. I mean, I think what the part that you're missing is I've trained staff previously, right? They're aware of what the concerns are. Using the tools, they're already using in the background, right? As from that shadow AI standpoint, but officially as part of a strategy and incorporating into the technology of what we're using internally, that's the piece that needs to that will be deployed and it has to be budgeted and paid for. It's not cheap to be using Copilot. I mean, that's what we're
Yeah.
going to be standardizing on for what we do internally. And
Did
that's,
you get budget for specific tools, or did you get a AI budget allocation that gives you the freedom to switch tools if a better technology comes out?
I allocated budget for a range of products to allow us
Great.
to do different things
Yeah.
because obviously we're using Adobe Creative Cloud, which already has AI in it. And the sad thing is this, the thing that you're saying is that I haven't deployed AI, but we're already using AI tools. We're using Adobe. We're using all the aspects of that. I've done several webinars on the tools that we're using over the last 2 years with DI. So technically, to your argument, my staff is already aware of how all these tools, we're already using AI for years. It's just going to be more official
Yeah.
that they can use the tools that I and the team had decided on to use and how be used internally for processes, which is a process, you know, through Infotech, for example, you have to understand the pro what each department does, what the process is, and what AI tools apply to it, and does it apply or not. So all those things have to be considered, you know, more efficiently to make the organization more efficient with AI usage.
I may have latched on a little too much to your comment about the marketing team not using AI specifically.
Yes. Well, they will be, and I'm sure they already are, but there's been a lot of controversy on that. But I can tell you one thing. The fact that we didn't, we're more higher ranking with our content than most others in the competitive market of CVBs. We do a competitive analysis, and we're ranking higher with our content. So, I mean, to me, that's better for that one aspect. Now, if they use AI in other areas, that's fine. But what you're publishing externally, and that's affecting ranking, that's most probably the most critical. And if Google is now determining that they're searching for content that is produced with AI, and they're ranking that lower, that to me is a detriment. So that's just my opinion on it.
Yeah, well said. I think we were probably somewhere in between the Jeanette approach and then the Vimal approach. Maybe a little close to the Jeanette approach, but I think you both make really valid points. I want to shift gears a little bit. One of the things that shocked me most when we did our number one presentation at DI Marcom was we asked the audience how many of you have a standard procedure or policies in place related to AI. And I don't know, it was certainly less than the majority of people. It was probably in the range of 25% raised their hand. And it's not like AI is a new thing. Jeanette mentioned it, ChatGPT really, which was the first for sort of major LLM that or generative thing that we had access to was November of what, 23, right? So, or
22.
22,
Yeah.
22, yeah. So it's been over 2 years that this has been out, and people don't even have a policy yet. And yet you could have gone on day one to ChatGPT and asked it to create you your policy and just debate it. And I know some of the big organizations, the DIs of the world and such, have sort of come out with opinions and suggestions, but it's a little surprising to me that there hasn't been like, here's the standard policy for DMOs that as a template that people could really gravitate towards. And a few people have done that individually, but there hasn't really been consensus around that. So to me, there's a concern that if DMOs aren't even getting their policy straight, then are we really getting our strategy straight long term related to AI? So Jeanette, I don't know if you have comments on that or thoughts.
Yes, like that's definitely something I want to be able to do for the industry. I think my hang up is like A, not an attorney, and B, the best guidance that I have seen anywhere for creating this already exists. It was created by Kara Franker and Roxanne Steinhoff from Steinhoff Law for the AI Opener for Destinations program that was created by GroupNow, and it is operated by Miles Partnership in the US and Canada. And they put together just this really thorough look at these are the questions you need to address. So what is your approach? So like you can't really use my AI policy as your organization's template because it's like we want to take not an aggressive approach, but we want to exploit all of the opportunities that AI presents to us. That approach, that's not Vimal's approach. Like, I can't just share it with everyone, and it wouldn't be kind of me to take other people's IP and say, there's a great guide to help you make this. And here are the questions that your DMO needs to think about. What is your approach? Are you very reserved, or are you running, full speed towards it? How do you feel about transparency? Do you say every single time when AI is helped with an image, a video, or words? Or does it have to meet a certain threshold first? Like there's questions that there's no yes or no. It's a spectrum. Where do you fall? And honestly, I think I just need to have some conversations with people about taking this great resource and sharing it more widely because it's not mine to share.
Can
Yeah, it should be more adopted, I think, by the industry. They did a great job, and I actually were talking with them the other day, and they were on a call, and they said they want to sort of do an updated version of a white paper now. And so sometimes I wish that we were as an industry more in lockstep. You know, we have these big organizations that are sort of driving some level of education, but there's never like consensus. And even though I know there's a lot of different DMOs, it would be easy for someone to come out and say, okay, here's like three starting points, and here's the things you should tweak, you know, almost like the Mad Libs that you're suggesting we do. But it's just, if we could get everyone aligned a little faster, and again, it's been 2 years, I think we'd be moving on to the more impactful stuff. But there's so many people sort of, yeah, but, and sort of using things like not having a policy as an excuse for not wanting to be brave enough to go learn a new skill that they maybe are a little fearful of. So I don't know. I wish there was more consensus.
Can I
Vimal, you have a
ask?
take on that?
Oh, go ahead, Vimal.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating because there's so many different approaches. Even with Kara's published article, I mean, I worked with Infotech, and then I'll give you an example. Kim from Grand Rapids used a lawyer. They did their aspect, and I did a webinar with DI on that, how to bring it together. And the interesting part is there's so many different ways to put this together. But I agree with you 100%, Stuart, that based maybe on the committee that we're both on, which is the Destinations International AI Technology Subcommittee, this is a great opportunity to, and Heidi's on there as well, to bring all that together and give a guideline and questions, and just help the industry, because it is a struggle, right, to ask those questions and get the answers and conform it to your processes internally, and making sure you have content, human in the loop. What, as you're saying, how is all that going to work? How is all the content going to be approved and then pushed? Are you going to label it as AI, as you just said? So that all that has to be written to the policy to make sure staff use it as a guideline, right? So I
Can
agree.
I
I'd like to
ask a
see that
dumb
shift.
question?
Go ahead. I got a follow-on thought from that,
Well, go
but
ahead. You go ahead, and then I'll ask my question.
well, so we had this actual conversation on that task force that Vimal was talking about. And so like we're sort of planning out some of the content and the resources that are going to be produced. And it was apparent to me that there was a lot of duplication from what's already existing, right? Everyone is producing content around how to do prompt engineering, right? And how to basic level, lowest common denominator resources. And the point I made was this stuff is already available. You know, our role should be pointing people to those resources or teaching them how to be scrappy enough to go find those resources. And then less focus on something a little deeper and a little more impactful to the industry. Stuff like here are policies or here's where trends of behavior are happening and what we need to be thinking about right now to get ahead of what DMO's role is going to be in the future. Like I think we spend a lot of time servicing that lowest common denominator with education that is just freely available, because it's easy, it's the low-hanging fruit, but I don't know that it's the right thing or the place we should be focused. So it's more of a broad sort of statement about the industry and something we could do a better job of, in my opinion. Adam,
Yeah,
go ahead. What was your question?
no, Jeanette, go ahead. I might change the topic slightly, so.
I was just going to share that SimpleView, ahead of the SimpleView Summit, as part of their new relationship with Granicus, they hosted a symposium for leadership the day before SimpleView Summit started. So
Good
I had
job.
the so I had the opportunity to lead a symposium on governance there. And it's like, to me, like that's gold. The opportunity to talk to destination leaders about, okay, like you said, Stuart, so much of the stuff we are already talking to death, like the basic stuff, to just talk to the people for whom this matters about, this is what your staff's doing with it. These are the actual risks that you're taking on by ignoring it, that not having a policy is having a policy of some sort. The risk doesn't disappear just because you're pretending like no one's using AI. And then here are the steps to follow to, set up your DMO for success. And so, like, I am hoping to do a lot more of that in 2025, and I'll definitely be doing, we're kicking off a
Awesome.
webinar series soon. So, like, leaning into finding the right audience to talk about that governance piece, it's critical because it's not
Yeah.
necessarily a, hey, all 1200 people at DI, let's talk about governance. It's a subset. So, like,
Yeah.
let's focus the education where it's needed.
Great
Awesome. So Jeanette
presentation. I
just
loved it.
said,
Jeanette's going to fix the industry. We appreciate it,
Done.
Jeanette.
I
So,
love the presentation though, because with the leadership that was there, the CEOs over there, I think it was fascinating just to see the concern that they had around, the privacy aspects. So, that great. I think it's good that you're doing that. I think it's going
thank
to
you.
help quite a bit.
Yeah.
And
There's a disconnect because the leaders, because they're not necessarily the ones doing the day-to-day work. When your job is talking to people and meeting with your board and seeing the new attraction, maybe you don't use AI as much as the person who's writing your social media posts. So it's showing that yes, even you can use AI, it's relevant to you. And also, guess what's happening that you don't see?
But
I'm going to make an
the
ageist
biggest thing
comment
is,
too. I mean, you think about the demographic of the C-suite leaders, a lot of times they're not the early adopters of technology in general. And so there's going to be some fear. I mean, I've got folks in our organization that don't even want to touch Zoom, so let alone AI. So it's here, but it's not evenly distributed. And so part of our job is to make sure everyone is educated on the opportunities, the risks, and the security challenges related to
yeah,
all of it.
but you gotta have to have you have to have CEO buy-in, you gotta have board buy-in, you have to have that strategy in play. All those coming together really helps with staff education and those types of things. That them embracing it is the biggest thing.
It's
I
what
think,
Jeanette calls the top-down and bottom-up approach. It has to
yeah.
happen at the same time, right?
Well,
Adam, go ahead.
see,
We keep cutting you
each
off.
of you comes from, I would say, a larger organization with a larger budget. I would encourage smaller destinations that may be listening to this saying, I don't have a big legal budget, or I don't have some of the resources that it would take to use, I believe it was InfoTech that you said, Vimal. I would encourage you to take the key decision makers in your organization, and maybe it's a couple members of your board and you, and say, ChatGPT 4o, I want to create an AI policy. Ask me the questions that you need answers for to create an AI policy for me. And it will take you through a series of questions. I've done this with a dozen different types of processes. And it will take you through the list of questions. You answer those questions thoughtfully, and then it will give you a policy that you can then run by an attorney. They'd spend 2 to 3 hours reviewing it and giving you any feedback you need. And at least then you've got a policy in place to protect your organization.
Yeah, you can even go one step further and say, even if you don't have an attorney budget, but you just want to, you're willing to take a little bit of risk, no more. You can tell ChatGPT, now pretend you're our attorney, look at this from this perspective, and it's going to give you the same feedback that a real attorney is going to give
And
within reason, right? So
there's custom GPTs that are
there's Legal
legal
Plus and stuff.
GPTs that you can use as well.
And So you
There's
can get
already resource out
99% of the
there.
way automatically.
I mean, Kara already has that resource out there. That's already done by a lawyer. So
That's
I've
right.
got great news
Upload
for that.
that with your
We're
prompt and
done.
say, upload that as an attachment and do the
Drop the
prompt.
mic for them.
All right. So everyone listening to this, if you don't have an AI policy, now next episode, we want to hear that you've gone and at least started that journey towards creating an AI policy.
Hashtag
But
post your policy.
Sounds like the most boring hashtag of all time, but
I can't wait to follow that
it's gonna go
hashtag.
I'm going to read
Viral.
all of the policies for sure. But I think it has to start with policy, right? And then there's other elements that have to happen, including training, security analysis, and stuff like that. But has to start with having a policy that's well thought through from every aspect. So bring together a group from your organization that are thinking about things from an HR perspective, a data security perspective, a content perspective. Bring them together, have this conversation, and play with ChatGPT together. But there's no excuse. It's been 2 years, guys. Can't wait another 2 years to have a policy. As Jeanette said, not having a policy is having a policy. That's making a statement that you're not taking it seriously. So, Guys, this has been great. I wish we had more time. We're going to have to get you all back on
It
the
flew
show
by.
again. Yeah, this is one of the fastest conversations. But really, really enjoyed it. Jeanette, if people want to reach out to you and if you have any final thoughts, it's the stage is yours.
I think I am going to hang up from this call and open up LinkedIn and start collecting a library of these resources because I get emails requesting samples of these documents all the time. So if the folks on this call, if you want to be the first guinea pigs in this experiment, I'm going to have a quick conversation with our general counsel, make sure it's not bad for me to blast out hours everywhere. And then you can find me on LinkedIn and it's slash Jeanette Rausch.
That's great. And I love this role that you're embracing with Brand USA. You know, we've never, you know, we've always invested in Brand USA and done co-ops and things like that. But I think this sort of thought leadership role that you've taken on in terms of getting us engaged in really trying to steer us collectively as an industry, I love it. I really encourage you to continue down that path. It's
Thank you
that's
so
very, very
much.
valuable. And giving us a forum to share with our peers as well. That's really valuable to us. So we're big fans of you and what Brand USA is doing. So
Oh, I'll chime in with something else. Anybody who's attending IPW, we're going to do an AI happy hour meetup Sunday before the opening event. So ping me on
awesome.
LinkedIn if you want your invitation.
Awesome. That's great. Vimal, stage is yours. Anything you want to share, final thoughts, and where can people reach you?
You can reach me at LinkedIn and also VVYS and visitraleigh.com. You can email me. And I've had a lot of calls with many folks asking questions about AI one-on-one, asking me about AI policies and those types of things. So you're welcome to email me and I can show you what tools I'm using. Also, thank you, Jeanette. This has been awesome. Thank you, Adam and Stuart. I really appreciate the conversation and Adam making it very good questions and hard questions. So I love the approaches that we've all taken. We're all trying to get to the place we need to be, and that is AI enabled. And so thank you again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And thanks for being a sport as we probed a little bit on some of your approaches. Adam, stage is yours, my friend.
Just thanks to both of you. I mean, to come on and talk about your opinions on something that has many different viewpoints and many different opinions around it. Just having the conversation is going to benefit so many people. And so thank you. Both of you are incredible leaders in the industry, and I really value this conversation. Would love to actually have a follow-up because I think we needed more time. If anybody wants to find me, you can find me on Tourism IQ or on LinkedIn or adam@thebrandrevolt.com.
Thank you, Adam. And you can find me at stuart.butler@visitmuddlebeach.com or on LinkedIn. I've been a little more active there recently, and it's really, I mean, it's interesting. I love this community, but I haven't really embraced it to the degree that there's folks like Jeanette have, and I'm trying to do a better job. And it's been really good. I'm getting a lot of good inbound messages. We've got a few folks that have reached out that I hadn't connected with before that want to be on the show. So it's really a great tool, and seems like the community's having a lot of fun there sharing and collaborating. So I'm definitely going to increase that. If you want to find out or if you want to keep listening to this kind of great content in this discourse, please subscribe, like, leave us a review. Don't forget, if you leave a review, Adam has to read it out on the show. So that's a big incentive right now. And we look forward to more of these conversations. I love the fact we had two people with different sort of perspectives that could come together and find common ground and disagree agreeably, because this is the only show in the industry that's allowing for this kind of discourse. So we appreciate you listening. Please tell a friend. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
But when we were talking, I dropped in the chat that I'm like, hey, O3, can you rebuild the role of US destination marketing organizations in the face of AI using first principles thinking?
Ooh, ooh, I like
Nice.
that.
I
That's
did want
an
to ask.
episode in and of itself.